Happens in Idaho is a podcast following the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. This podcast is hosted and produced by me, Kayla Waters, in correlation with my other podcast, True Crime Exposed. I have followed this case closely as it all came to an end here in Idaho, just 30 minutes north of where I grew up and currently live. I will be attending most days of Lori Daybell's trial at the Madison County Courthouse in Rexburg, Idaho. This is the area which the crimes took place, and this is the only location outside of Ada County that has access to the live stream of this trial. Each day, I will recap the trial for you here. Welcome to It Ends in Idaho, the Lori Daybell Trial. This is episode 13 in the recap of the Lori Daybell trial. I'm not sure what my brain was doing with the last episode, episode 12, but when I edited and published it, I totally forgot to add in 3 911 calls that I meant to play. So I have gone back and fixed that, adding in the 3 911 calls. If you listened to episode 12 in the first few days of it being published, then you might want to go back and check those out. The first two 911 calls are made by Tammy Daybell's son-in-law and Tammy Daybell herself on the day that she is shot at with a paintball gun, or what she thinks was a paintball gun. This was on October 9th, 2019. The third 911 call comes in from Chad Daybell and Garth Daybell. They're reporting Tammy's death after they find her deceased that morning. I also misspoke during one piece of that episode, and that's where I said Tammy Daybell's life insurance paid Chad Daybell $3,000. No. It was $300,000. Again, I have fixed that, but I wanted to clarify here for you guys who listened to it before it was fixed. Chad was paid out $300,000 by Primerica. Now in episode 13, you're going to hear the testimony of Chad and Tammy Daybell's neighbors, Todd and Alice Gilbert. You're also going to hear a podcast recording that Lori Vallow was on with her friends. The prosecution continues their case in chief for the state of Idaho versus Lori Noreen Daybell. Now, Lindsay Blake calls Alice Gilbert to the stand. Alice moved into the same church ward as Chad and Tammy in 2017. She was neighbors with the family, and she had the same church calling as Tammy Daybell in the LDS church. Alice was the Relief Society president, and Tammy was the first counselor. Alice testifies that Tammy was a great person. She was a shy woman, organized, and she knew computers like the back of her hand. Alice observed Chad and Tammy together at church. They seemed great and normal. In 2019, Alice did notice that Chad was more distant with Tammy. She says that Tammy never said anything about her marriage. She only ever once said her finances were a little strained. Alice says that Tammy never slowed down with her activity level prior to her death. In fact, Alice says Tammy increased her activity. She testifies that at 7 a.m. on October 19, 2019, Emma Daybell called sobbing and saying that her mom had died. Chad took the phone and told Alice to wait an hour to tell anyone. Alice said that they needed to call the bishop. Chad told her no, but Alice called anyway. She then went over to the Daybell home later that day. All the children and their spouses were there except for Mark, who was on his mission in Africa. Alice says that Chad did not seem stunned. He claimed Tammy had probably died of an embolism. He said around midnight, Tammy was throwing up. None of the kids said anything. Alice said she thought they were way too stunned to talk. After stopping by, Alice testifies that her and her husband went to go and get the family breakfast. Chad told Alice that the funeral would be Tuesday, and the memorial would be on Wednesday. Alice asked if he planned this, meaning did Tammy and Chad talk about their death plans just in case. Chad said no, but it caught Alice off guard because it was clearly planned to be happening so quickly. Alice starts crying on the stand when she says that she needed to see Tammy in the casket and tell her goodbye. The funeral was in Springville, Utah. Alice assumed that it's because the family used to live there and Tammy's family is there. Although Alice was surprised because she thought the kids would want Tammy close by so they could visit her grave. During the funeral, Alice told Chad that Tammy looked good. And he just said, yeah, she does. He didn't seem mournful, but Alice says that she didn't know how Chad reacted to things. She testifies that all of Tammy's kids spoke at the funeral. She was amazed at the great tributes they gave their mother with such little time to pull it all together. Alice says that Chad's talk was also good, but it felt more like a church talk than how a spouse might speak. Members of the LDS church made a dinner meal, and Alice takes it to the Daybell home after they return from the funeral and memorial services in Utah. The kids start eating, and Chad said he was moving out because he couldn't bear to be in the home. He was going to move to Rexburg, and he had a good friend there with a condo who would let him stay. Chad called this friend a male friend. Lindsay asks if anything else struck her, and Alice says yes. Chad told his kids to go through Tammy's things that afternoon. She doesn't think the children really questioned him. On Friday, almost a week after Tammy's death, Alice went to see Emma. She said that Emma was struggling because she missed her mom. She was also having a hard time because the kids couldn't get a hold of Chad Daybell. Emma said that Chad didn't want anything to do with them. Garth expressed that he feared he would lose his dad too. The defense objects, citing hearsay, and Judge Boyce sustains the objection. Following Tammy's death, Emma became really sick and she lost a lot of weight. Garth and Seth were living in Chad and Tammy's home. Alice and her husband end up reaching out to Chad. They make a call asking if they could come and visit him, but he said no, he would make the trip out to them instead. Chad comes over, Alice had made cookies, and they ask him how he's doing. He told them he was doing really good, and that he met a woman he was going to marry. Alice starts crying as she recalls that this was around October 26, 2019. Tammy had passed away a week earlier on October 19th. Alice testifies that Chad went on to describe how beautiful this new woman was, and he said he met her at a conference in St. George back in October of 2018. They ask her name, and at first Chad did not want to say who it was, but then he reluctantly tells them it's Lori Vallow. Alice didn't know someone named Lori Vallow, but then Chad says she did a podcast with Melanie Gibb, and it clicks for Alice. She testifies that then she knew who it was. Alice had never met Lori, but she recognized the name. She ended up meeting Lori Vallow later. On Tuesday nights, Alice says that her and her husband Todd worked in the temple. They were waiting for a meeting when Chad taps them on the shoulder and asks them to step into the hallway. Alice meets Lori and her niece Melanie Boudreaux very briefly. She says it was awkward. That same week, Lori and Chad came together to the Gilberts' house. Alice says that Lori and Chad were quite affectionate with each other. It was abnormal for them to see Chad like this. Chad had his arm around Lori, his arm over her legs. There was lots of giggling and laughing. Alice says that her and Todd were embarrassed because Chad and Lori were acting like teenagers. Alice asked if Lori had been married before. And Lori told her yes, but she had a husband that passed away in December. Then Alice says that at this time, Chad tells them that Lori had also recently lost a daughter. Alice says she is sorry and asks Lori how many children she has. Lori stammers when answering, noting something about stepchildren being involved. Alice testifies she didn't really get a definite answer. She goes on to say that it was way too fast to see Chad there at her home with Lori Vallow. During this visit, they mention that Chad's going to Hawaii and he's going to write a book. They also mention a trip they're taking to Knoxbury Farms. They're going with Chad's children. There was no mention of taking any children of Lori's. Before that trip, Lori and Chad had come to the Gilberts' home a second time and showed them wedding pictures. Alice was shocked. It was all too fast. She testifies that back in February of 2019, Chad had come to their house to tell the Gilberts he had a vision. He saw that Tammy would not live past the age of 50. After Lori was arrested, Chad went to the Gilberts' home asking if he could live in a spare bedroom at their house. He said that his house was too crowded, but they said no, telling him that they had a daughter who was coming to stay with them. And after Lori's bond hearing, Chad had the audacity to ask if they would put up their property for Lori's bond. They told him they would think about it. The next day, Chad calls them saying he had a bondswoman coming to meet with them. They say they're still thinking about it. Now Alice is being asked by Lindsay Blake about when she asked Chad why he told her Lori had recently lost a daughter. The defense keeps objecting, usually citing hearsay or relevance. Alice even lets out a frustrated chuckle. Alice says that Chad responded to her questions about Tylee with, quote, "She didn't like people and she didn't like me." Alice chokes up, saying she noticed that Chad used the word didn't instead of doesn't, talking about Tylee in the past tense. Alice goes on to describe overhearing Chad at her home saying to someone, "They think I killed my wife," referring to Alice and Todd Gilbert. Lindsay Blake says, "I don't have anything further, Your Honor." Jim Archibald stands to conduct the cross-examination. He asks Alice about her connection to Melanie Gibb. Alice says that her and her husband just listened to the podcast Lori and Melanie did. She describes them as uplifting, positive episodes. Jim asks if she ever read Chad's books, and Alice says yes. They read Chad's last series before they lived in the same neighborhood. She knew his name before he was her neighbor. She says that she didn't talk to Chad about the conferences he spoke at, but she did attend one in Rexburg and one in Boise, Idaho. She says the conferences were not sponsored by the LDS Church and people from all walks of life would attend. It was more of an end times group that did things like food storage preparation. Jim asks if Chad was convincing about his beliefs, and she said he would talk as if he absolutely knew things. She admits it did seem like some people were drawn to the things Chad said. Alice says she didn't believe him, but would more nod along with him just to get through the conversation when he would talk to her about it. Mr. Archibald asks if Lori was enamored with Chad, and Alice says she was definitely in love with him. The defense has no further questions, and Lindsay Blake stands for follow-up, asking if Chad appeared enamored with Lori, and was he more affectionate with her than he had ever been with Tammy. Alice says yes, and goes on to say that she doesn't think one was controlling the other. Lindsay has nothing further. With that, Alice Gilbert concludes her testimony and is led off the stand. Up next to testify is Todd Gilbert, Alice's husband. He says that his family moved into Chad's neighborhood in March of 2017. He met the family a week after moving in, and they saw each other once a week at church, if not more, while out in the yard. Todd says that at first, Chad just discussed his beliefs, but later on, he was trying to teach them. He testifies that he's not sure if he himself believed Chad's teachings or not. Even back then, he said he was on the fence. Todd recalls that when Chad told him about the vision of Tammy dying before her 50th birthday, Chad first said, "I don't know if I should tell you this." And on the morning of Tammy's death, Todd felt like Chad was more businesslike with a plan already in place for the funeral. Todd says he forgot about Chad's mentioning of Tammy dying early until this morning. And he says to Chad, "I guess it happened." Todd testifies that Chad turned his back to his children and whispered, "It did." Chad indicated he had never told his children of this vision. Todd noticed at the funeral service that Chad seemed to have it all together. He wasn't too sad, and he would have thought Chad would stumble more through his talk at the funeral, but he did pretty good for someone who just lost their wife. Right after this, Chad said he couldn't live at his home anymore, so he was moving into a friend's condo in Rexburg. Now, Lindsay Blake asks about that meeting when Chad comes to the Gilberts' home a few days after the funeral. This was when Chad told the Gilberts he had a new girlfriend, and that was only 2 to 3 days after the memorial service for Tammy Daybell, which was the day after her funeral. That funeral occurred 3 days after Tammy's death. So Lindsay Blake notes that 1 week after Tammy's death, Chad is telling people he has a new girlfriend. Todd says yes. Chad talked about how beautiful she was, and when Chad said Lori's name, Todd recognized it. He had heard her on a podcast with Melanie Gibb and Jason Mao. He goes on to know about the time he met Lori when Chad brought her to the Gilberts' home. He says the same thing his wife had. They looked like a couple of teenagers first in love. He repeats a lot of the same things that we heard from Alice. Todd testifies that Chad told him his kids were missing their mom, but that they were also feeling good about Lori. Chad also said that Tammy had visited him in spirit and told him that she was fine with everything. Chad, I'm sure. When Lindsay Blake says that she has no further questions, a lunch break is called. Cross-examination of Todd Gilbert will occur following this break. Jim Archibald conducts that cross. He starts by asking about the background, how they knew each other, for how long, what church they went to. Jim asks if after getting to know Todd, Chad wrote a book referencing Todd. And he says this is true. Chad did have a character named Brother Gilbert in his series, Times of Turmoil. Todd laughs a lot when being asked about this. Jim asks if this reference was an insult or flattery, and Todd said he felt it was flattery. Todd says that Chad's books were about the second coming of Jesus Christ. Now Jim asks about the podcast Todd heard with Lori on it. Todd had mentioned Jason Mao, and Jim asks Todd who this is. He testifies that he doesn't know much about him, he was just involved in this podcast. Jim asks if he is a retired police detective that is now a motivational speaker. But before Todd can answer, Lindsay Blake objects, and Judge Boyce sustains. Jim asks if there was also a man named Thor on this podcast, and Todd says yes. At this point, Jim asks Judge Boyce to admit Defendant Exhibit E. This is the first piece of evidence they've asked to admit from the defense. Lindsay Blake asks to approach for a private sidebar. Then Judge Boyce announces that the jurors will have to leave the room briefly because an argument about the admittance of this evidence needs to be heard outside the presence of the jury. As this starts, Jim notes that the podcast episode is 1 hour and 49 minutes long, and he would intend to publish the entirety to the jury. The prosecution argues that the evidence was not on the exhibit list. There's a lack of foundation, it contains hearsay, it seems like an attempt from the defendant to get statements into the record without taking the stand. It doesn't appear to be proper cross-examination. She says if the court considers admitting this as evidence, the prosecution asks for a recess so that the state can review this. Jim says that the defense did not put this on their witness list because they didn't know Mr. Gilbert was going to say what he said. Before the jury is let in, Jim has to lay foundational questions with Todd to see if it will be admitted. Jim asks if Todd would recognize the voices on the podcast he testified to if he heard them, and Todd says yes. Ultimately, Judge Boyce allows the first 40 minutes of this podcast to be played for the jury. You know how I mentioned earlier that the sound quality from Lori's podcast was probably not great since they were recording from the kitchen? Well, you'll hear during this podcast recording a lot of weird sounds. I don't know if it's like chirping in the background. Todd had mentioned maybe it was kids running around in the background. But yeah, I was right. The audio quality is awful. So you hear a lot of background noise. Hopefully you're able to make out what they're saying.
Father in the world. I've had experiences with Heavenly Mother. She is so incredibly loving that it has changed my life. Jesus Christ is a big part of this. The angel Michael to become warriors. I just wanted to give you a prelude before I started my story. So anyways, when I was 12 years old, I grew up on the Indian reservation. And the culture on the Indian reservation was that everybody smoked and everybody drank. So by the time I was 12, I was a smoker and a drinker. And that was the culture. So everyone did it, and there really wasn't any rules that you weren't supposed to. So I started drinking and smoking, and that was part of my life. And as I became more of an alcoholic, by the time I was 18, 19, 20, I started falling into a lot of pitfalls. So one of the unique experiences, as I tell my story too, is that I see the spirits coming into the room to actually coax people into what they're doing. So when we hear about spirit prison, it's very real. And that Satan is here, and his minions are here. So, as I started drinking and falling into the traps, you could see the spirits of people that were deceased around the people that were about to drink alcohol and different things, and would help them to lure them in. And then as they did, then you could see the spirit kind of fading. It wasn't as bright. So anyways, to get into when things really started to change for me was near the end of my drinking. I had gotten to a point in my life where I really didn't even care if I lived anymore. Drinking and drugging just gets to the point where it just suppresses your spirit so much that you can care less if you're alive. So I planned it all out that I was going to end my life. Satan had always been around me, and kind of in the backdrifts of different things, kind of watching over me. But on the night that I decided to end my life, there he was with me. And he was like, just do it. Just kill yourself. And I pulled out a 12-gauge shotgun. I pulled it up to my head. I was ready to blow my brains out. I was ready to end this life. And I guess there was a different plan for me. Because that was the night that Heavenly Mother came into the room, and as Satan looked at her, he ran out of the room, and she said, Thor, I love you so much, and it's time to start our new life. That's the night that would forever change my life, and that's the night that would forever change my testimony to each and every one of you to have faith in this journey, because it's very real. The following day, I got up, and I drove my car, and I was getting ready to go to the next big party, and out on the road came a and I got to the place where I was going to, and I'm like, you've been saved. The blood of Christ has been shed for you. And I didn't really fully understand at the time, that night, I took a demon out of my body. But the best part of everything is I started having faith that the system was real and that what God set up for me was I would start to get like this tree of life. It would be about sacrifice and gratitude and all the different tests that we're going through on earth. They all have a purpose. So this big tree would come in front of me, and it would be like gratitude. And I would have people around me that wouldn't show me any gratitude. And then the next couple months later, it would have like tons of gratitude. People would be like, thank you so much for your story. You're just a great guy. Thank you for hanging out with me tonight. And then at the end of the test, it would be like, so what did you prefer better? Did you like the people with gratitude or no gratitude? And I'd be like, well, obviously, I like the gratitude. Like, okay, move on, and then I'd move on to my next test. And it was just one after another of all these different tests, and I would have to love myself in order to give love to others. So it's like I desperately prayed to Father. I cried many nights. It was like, when am I going to meet an Earl and settle down? Maybe I'd go, you're not quite ready yet. he would show me this big graph and it would say, you need to love yourself first before I introduce you to one of my beautiful daughters. I can't give love unless you have love. So then he would sit and show me like how involved he was in my life. And I would have hummingbirds that would come around me and people that told me they loved me. Just like, Thor, try it this way now, try it this way, if you can show me how I passed the test. And all along I was with, my heart was getting stronger and bigger with love. And then when it was filled with love, he said to me at a restaurant one day, there was a big checkered flag. He's like, Thor, you've been passing your tests. You're about to meet, you know, your wife. And I met her like a few days later. But it's just so significant to me, like, people say, how do you get from here to here? If you can see Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ and Heavenly Mother, and this earth was perfectly created for us to come to, exactly 93 million miles away from the sun. If it was any closer, we'd burn to death. Any farther, we'd freeze to death. There's a perfect alignment where it's on an axis and it's got a magnet system where the rocks don't hit us. It's perfectly created with oxygen, carbon dioxide, every single thing in it. And if you can start to visualize that this was perfectly designed for me to come to at this exact time, for this exact experience, and if I am willing to pass all the tests that I signed up for, I basically have won the lottery. If I pass the test, when I fall back on the other side of the veil, all that the Father has will be given to his sons and daughters. I found the fountain of youth. My spirit goes on for eternity. I'll never die. My spirit will keep going and passing the tests and coming to exaltation. I will have pure joy. No more Satan. So as I see all of these things come in front of me, I'm like, Father, I want to pass my tests. I know that everyone has different tests, but I know that we need to understand these tests because it's exactly what I signed up for this exact time on this exact mission. And if I pass these tests, all these amazing things are coming. And I want to be part of your team because you created it. Satan, he's here for opposition. He can bruise my heels, but he can't crush my head. So many times that I was about to have huge blessings in my life, Satan was so good with the natural man that he could just throw a party here, and throw this here, and throw this there, and detract me from getting this amazing blessing. And that was part of his plan, was to stop us from getting this full exaltation, all this joy. But you can't hurt me anymore. Now that I know how you do this, and now I know you do this, and how you do this, you cannot hurt me anymore. Stand behind me. I don't want you in my life. I know that you're going to try to impact people around me. I know you're going to throw darts, but that's okay. You know what? I'm on this side. I've stood in rooms where people are sitting there, and family members that are angels that have came into the room, they whisper in their ear, and I see their spirits evolve a little bit more. I love to stand in the room when an angel comes in a white silhouette. When they enter the room, all light drives out all darkness. No evil spirits are allowed in the room. And those angels literally can move heaven and earth and shape plans up like you wouldn't believe. After seeing some of the different angels and different things going on, I want to pass my test, and I want to be one of the angels that's able to come in and to help my family members out and the people around me, just to literally come in and bam! The no darkness can be in the room where the light just shatters everyone. That's what I want. My message as a testimony of these things, I've had several near-death experiences, but I've made it. And I'm on this side today. I promise you that our journey is very real, and our eternal spirits are counting on it. As you see the battlefield around you, choose to be the one that's walking forward and not getting distracted by the evil spirits or fear and chaos. There is three voices that you will hear as you're on your journey. When the heavens are speaking to you, they are very clear confident and loving. Try it this way. Do it this way. They already know everything about you. They already know what to do. They know the plan. The human mind will evaluate things where it's like, should I or shouldn't I? I'm not quite sure. To my understanding this far on my journey, this is what I do. And the longer you're on the journey, the more you see it, and the more you know, but... Satan, whenever he's in the room, I can always feel the energy because there is chaos, drama, fear, destruction. He's always destroying. So you can always see who's been in the room. You can just feel like a negative energy. It's just, I feel very grateful to be a witness of, to be able to feel the energy of a room and then to see some of the things going on where I'm able to relay that back to others. So I hope the spirit that has felt tonight, where you felt that message, that I'm not the kind of person that would ever fib about something like this. This is very real, and it's awesome. God's plan is perfect. Every single thing that you are going through is real, and whether it's making you a warrior or more of a kind and loving person, all the people involved are just rooting you on. You've got family members that are around you. You've got guardian angels. You've got... Your spirit is a lot stronger than you even know when you signed up for the mission. I mean, you were already a mature spirit before you even came to Earth. There's three levels of the celestial kingdom. So anything you didn't know yesterday, that's fine. Tomorrow morning, there's going to be a blue curtain that's going to come up. It's going to be a brand new day, and anything you didn't do right yesterday, you get a whole new chance today. It's like, all right, today I'm going to do it differently. And every single day you do it differently and differently, and then you pass the test, and you're like, all right, moving on. Just marching down the field, and I'm passing my tests. And even the bad experiences in life, you start to see some of the people around you, like friends or family, they're having struggles with those tests, but because you went through them, you have empathy for them, and you look at them, and you're like, hey, try it this way, maybe this way. You are able to give somebody life that is itself. And once you plant that seed, the big puzzle goes up in front of you, and it's like, boom, 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 all the pieces start to come together, then all of a sudden you see it, and it's there, and you're able to see it. So I love coming to events like this, because every person that speaks, you're able to take a little piece of part of their journey, and see how God worked in their life, and it's like, wow. And we can see it through their spiritual eyes, and so I hope that that made a difference in your life tonight by some of my experiences, and if you have some questions for me later on or whatever after these guys talk, then I'll be here until probably about 8:30. Thank you so much. My name is Thor Michael Forsyth, and I appreciate your time tonight, and letting me be part of your life tonight. Say that.
The waiting is over. The question is over. It's time for you to pick a side. decision that I made a while ago. And I had to travel a very, very hard road to get to that point. I grew up in the church, but I was not a very good Mormon. I could sure talk the talk, I could sure walk the walk. I went on a mission and all that stuff, but I hadn't had my conversion process. Carried on with my life. You guys all, most of you know my story. For those of you that don't, very quickly, I've been a soldier, a police officer my entire life. 6 months after I got home off my mission, I joined the Army, and this is all I've ever done. And I've been all over the world, and I've seen some pretty cool things, and I've done some pretty cool things. And I was wounded very severely in the line of duty back in 2013. I was in a fight with a drug dealer in a dark alley, it was just me and him. And I was wounded so severely that I lost the ability to walk. It took me about 3 years for the walk. At that time, my wife left me. I got no support from the police department. They said it was a pre-existing condition. I wounded myself. I came to work and worked a 10-hour shift as a cop. And so when it was all said and done, I was homeless, crippled, unemployed, broke, and divorced. All the same. So you get to that point where there's nothing left in your life. You have to make a choice. And I chose victory. I fought my way out of it hand over hand. Found love again, rebuilt my life, rebuilt my finances, was honorably medically retired from the police department because I refused to give up. And I went to the Lord and I said, look, I thought we were good. You know, for the first 30 years of my adult life, I was this guy. You know, I was the sheepdog. I got between the wolves and the sheep. And I was really good at what I did. And I liked what I did. Jumping out of airplanes, kicking in doors, you know, fighting match football with, you know, drug dealers. And you know, traveling all over the world, just doing good deeds for other people. That was me. And I'm only good at a few things, and that was it. That was one of them. And I thought we were good. I thought Heavenly Father and I had this deal. I would do this, he would make me good at this, and I would just keep doing this. And so when I lost everything, including my ability to be the sheepdog anymore, and everything that I needed in my life to make it possible for me to be the sheepdog, everything was gone. And I was convalescing in my mom's sewing room on a child's table, is where I ended up. I went from being a SWAT cop to an invalid, like that. And so I went back to Heavenly Father and I said, look, I thought we were good. I thought we had this agreement. You know, I was this guy. This was what I was supposed to do. And in his way of answering my prayers, which he answers all of us specifically for how we need to hear it, he said, no, I allowed you to survive all of that so that you can do this now. This is your job. And so my job now is to wake up that warrior spirit inside of us, help us become who we were destined to become, and to help who's ready to hear put themselves on that path of greatness, that path of destiny that we have. Many of us have been preordained to do very, very amazing things here on this earth. I heard a quote from Winston Churchill, and I actually printed it out on one of the brains. I thought it was very Winston Churchill, during the height of World War II, was trying to inspire the British people. Most of you know the story about the Battle of Britain and how they were being almost overrun by the Nazis. To every man there comes, and I say man, I mean mankind, to every man there comes that special moment when he is figuratively tapped on the shoulder and offered the chance to do a special thing unique to him and fitted to his talent. Not in a general sense, but specifically for that person. What a tragedy if that moment finds him unprepared or unqualified for the work which would be his finest hour. Can you imagine having to stand in front of Heavenly Father and account for what you've done, knowing fully that you were given this special job that only you could do? This would have been your finest hour. You at that moment in time would have been the most important thing in his kingdom, because you and only you could have accomplished this mission, and you failed because you didn't Take the time to figure out who you are. You didn't sanctify yourself. You didn't prepare yourself. You didn't trust in our Heavenly Father. You didn't act like a warrior. There's only one reason why you're on this earth right now, because you were a warrior in heaven. You were prepared in the pre-existence for this moment in time to come down on this earth and face Satan and open warfare because of how valiant you were in the pre-existence. President Nelson 6 months ago looked your children in the eye and called them the Lord's Youth Battalion. He was very specific. President Nelson doesn't just use words. Okay, he is a very intelligent man, and every word that he uses is thought over and considered. And he used a military formation to describe what he means now. A battalion of youth. Now, we have an example of this in scriptures. Before, there was a group of young men that were called to serve. And we all know this story. Most of us know this story. What are we talking about here? The stripling warriors, right? Now, if you have ears to hear, what did the president of the church, the prophet of God, just call our children? The modern-day stripling warriors. He's calling for his battalions, his youth battalions. If they are the modern-day stripling warriors, if you have ears to hear, what did he just call us, the parents of these children? The mothers and fathers that prepared those stripling warriors for combat. Physical, mental, emotional, spiritual combat. What is our responsibility as the parents of these stripling warriors? To prepare them for combat on all four of those fronts. The stripling warriors in the Book of Mormon did everything to exactness. They didn't come to camp and learn how to do everything to exactness. They showed up that way. Because of what their mothers had taught them, because of how the examples their fathers had shown them. If you have ears to hear, you have been called to the work. You have been enlisted in the Lord's army to train the youth battalions and prepare them for combat, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual. And if you are not prepared to do that, then it's time for you to sanctify yourself, to cleanse the inner vessel. Because it doesn't matter what you want to do in this world, if you don't have that personal connection with our Heavenly Father, if you are not prepared, like President Nelson said, to receive personal revelation in your life, then you will not survive spiritually. Those are his words. And if the parents of the stripling warriors, the modern-day stripling warriors, cannot survive spiritually, where are these children going to learn to fight? Are they going to learn from school? Are they going to learn from the government? Are they going to learn it from entertainment and from their cell phones? This world has been designed to destroy them. Everything in this world has been designed to distract them away from this most important job, as President Nelson described. The single most important job on this earth is to prepare this earth for the second coming. Everything your child does, participates in, listens to, goes to, everything is designed to distract them, to destroy them. Satan has prepared his battle space for 6,000 years. And every ambush, every trap, every choke point, every kill box, every attack point on this battle space that your children are under, he has prepared this for hundreds, if not thousands of years. We didn't wake up one morning and just have a problem with pornography. This is something that has been going on for hundreds, if not thousands of years, to attack the soldiers before they ever get onto the field. We didn't have just wake up one morning and have a problem with multiculturalism or having a hard time even defining the difference between man and woman. This is something that he started in motion to destroy this generation because he knows who we are. We faced him in battle before, each of us, specifically, hand-to-hand combat, or we wouldn't be here. If we weren't the most valiant in the pre-existence, he wouldn't have even brought us here at this time. Some of you literally put your hands on evil and walked them out of heaven. And that is why Heavenly Father trusts you so much. And that is why Satan pushes down so hard on you. Because he knows exactly who you are and exactly how powerful you are. Now, a warrior looks at that, a civilian would look at that and go, oh, woe is me, look how difficult my life is. Oh, I'm broken, I'm unemployed, this is horrible. A warrior goes, hey, I'm going to wear this contempt like a badge of honor. That tells me exactly who I am. If Satan has focused so much energy on me, that That is a testament. That is a witness to you about how important you are, how powerful you are, and how dangerous you are to this planet. That is how a warrior looks at things. Now, the prophet of God has called for his words. He has sounded assembly. He has blown the trumpets and beaten the drums. It is time to become who you are. It is time to wake up, shed off the earthly man, move up from the celestial to the terrestrial state. Do not be led, but lead. That is why you are here. That is who you are. When you feel that inside of you, when you hear that, and you feel that burn inside of you, that is the captain's call. That is the trumpet to assemble. That is your warrior spirit rising up inside of you. Don't deny it. Don't fight against it. Embrace it. Accept who you are. And move forward with faith. My name is Jason Lau, and I go all over the country, and I motivate people. I inspire people to greatness. And if you guys have any questions about this stuff and the process that I went through to get to this point, I would love to ask them to. Thank you.
Jason, I love everything that Jason says, so...
Your Honor, I'm going to renew our objection and ask to approach.
Okay, thanks, counsel. And I'm going to overrule the objection of the state and allow that to be played for the jury to consider. So that'll be the court's ruling. We'll go ahead and have the jurors brought in at this time then and have that part of the podcast published, Mr. Archibald.
I'll just be really quick so you guys can ask questions. I am a witness of Jason Bow. So that's the story of Jason and I. So I have women that I walks in and my friend goes, oh, that's that girl who writes books about the world coming. And I was like, my spirit is just like burning within me, right? I'm like, so my whole spirit is just like burning. I'm like, oh, we're going to have to go talk to people. Oh, I hate to go talk to people I don't know. And you're not like to just walk up to people, interrupt them in the celestial room while they're just pondering and those things. So I just love you guys. And so I told the Lord, I said, if we're supposed to talk to them, make him come talk to us.
Following the audio, Jim Archibald asks Todd a few more questions for the defense. He confirms that the voices were from Melanie Gibb, Lori Vallow, Thor, and Jason Mao. Jim goes on to ask if the purpose of the podcast was to be uplifting, and Todd testifies yes. Then Mr. Archibald asks if the ideas expressed on the podcast were mainstream LDS teachings. Todd says most of it was, but the ideas were starting to stray. He also notes that Chad's beliefs were starting to stray away from the LDS Church. Jim asks about Chad telling Todd that Tammy had visited him in spirit. Todd testifies that at that time, he didn't really have any reason to doubt Chad Daybell. Jim Archibald has one more question. He chuckles, reminding Todd that he mentioned during his testimony, Chad and Tammy always sat near the front row during sacrament meeting at church. As he noticed their relationship become more strained, Todd had noted that Chad and Tammy had moved closer and closer to the back each meeting. So Jim asks if sitting in the back or the front indicates someone's spirituality. Todd says, quote, "Well, not really. It just, I don't know. Some people just sit closer to the front, some sit to the back." Jim reminds Todd that he testified noticing this move in seating arrangement for Chad and Tammy, and he wonders what this meant to Todd. Todd says it felt like they were trying to hide a little bit. He did not feel that it was because they were sinning more than others. But Jim says, "So if you want to hang out with the sinners, you hang out in the back of the church." And Todd chuckles, saying, "Well, not always." Jim ends saying, "All right, thank you, sir." Lindsay Blake stands for the prosecution and wants to conduct a brief redirect. She asks Todd if he recognized the voice of Chad Daybell on the podcast recording. And Todd testifies no, but he did recognize Lori Vallow's voice. Lindsay asks Todd if he also recognized the voices of Melanie Gibb, Thor, and Jason Mao. When Todd says yes, Lindsay asks if he's aware that any of their children ended up buried in Chad Daybell's backyard. Todd says, quote, "Well, none of them that I'm aware of." And the prosecution has no further questions. With that, day 15 of witness testimony comes to a conclusion. On day 16 of witness testimony, we hear from Lori's ex-friend, Audrey. And that was a day of testimony I was very glad to be present for. And I cannot wait to recap it for you here on the next episode. This podcast was produced by True Crime Exposed and is hosted by me, Kayla Waters. Please leave us a 5-star written review as we are a new podcast and help spread the word.